Chapter 1. Growing Up Different. India is a wonderful country, yet I wasn't destined to live there. Although my parents are ethnically Indian, originating from Hyderabad, Sindh, I was born in the beautiful country of Singapore. My paternal grandfather was a textile merchant who owned a family business in Sri Lanka, importing and exporting European, Indian, and Chinese textiles throughout the world. Because of the nature of our company, my father was required to travel around before finally settling down in what was the British colony of Hong Kong when I was just 2 years old. My origins immersed me in three cultures and languages simultaneously. Hong Kong, a vibrant and bustling metropolis, is a city predominantly populated by Chinese, so I learned to speak Cantonese with the local people. My parents sent both my brother Anoop and me to British schools, where the teaching was in English and most of my schoolmates were British expatriates. At home, however, my family spoke our native Sindhi language and practiced the Hindu way of life. My father was a tall, handsome man who commanded respect from his family. Although I knew he loved us, his manner was strict and he expected us to conform to his rules. I was afraid of him, and as a child, I made sure that I never crossed him. In contrast, my mother was always kindly towards both my brother and myself, and I never feared sharing my feelings with her. I absolutely adored Anoop, and we've been very close our whole lives, even though he's 5 years older than I am. For a child, this is a substantial age gap, so we rarely played together, nor did we ever squabble. Instead, I looked up to him, and he was always very protective of me. I felt very safe when he was around and knew that I could speak to him about anything. He has always been a stronger male influence in my life than my father. As traditional Hindus, my parents had an arranged marriage and they hoped to someday set up suitable matches for Anoop and me when we were old enough. Also, traditionally, a woman would be required to be subservient to her husband and to the men of the household. Such gender inequality is rife in my culture. As a young child, however, I didn't question these values and took for granted that this is the way things were supposed to be. My first uncomfortable experience with this disparity came at the tender age of 6 when I overheard a conversation between another lady and my mother. "Were you disappointed that your second child was a girl when she was born?" this woman asked in our Indian dialect. I felt a sense of anxiety rise within me as I awaited the response. "No, of course not. I love my daughter," my mother replied, much to my relief. "But girls are a problem, especially when they grow up," the woman said. "With girls, you have to make sure they don't get spoilt, otherwise they won't get a good husband. And the amount of the dowry that's required to get a daughter married only gets higher with each passing year. You can't predict the future. Every child, whether girl or boy, brings with them their own fate," I recall my mother replying wisely. "Well, I'm happy that I have 2 sons, the woman said proudly, and even my young mind was able to detect the sense of achievement she felt as she made that statement. Later, when my mother and I were alone together, I asked, "Mama, is it true that girls are a problem?" "No, of course not, Beta, darling," she responded. Beta is an affectionate term for my child in our dialect. My mother pulled me close and gave me a hug, and at that moment I recall thinking, "I never want to be a problem to my parents just because I'm a girl. I don't want them to ever wish I were born a boy." Our first home in Hong Kong was an apartment in a 9-story building in Happy Valley overlooking the horse racing track. I used to spend hours looking out the window at the jockeys in their colourful silks training the horses for the weekend races. The tram line ran along the main road outside our apartment blocks and the tram would noisily interrupt my daydreams as they rumbled past below me while I gazed out of our 7th-floor apartment window. Most mornings, I'd roll myself out of bed to the familiar rich fragrance of sandalwood and rose-scented incense. I've always loved the aroma as it offered me a sense of peace and serenity. I'd usually find my mother dressed in one of her myriad-coloured salwar kameez, or traditional Indian dress, made mostly of fine Indian silks or French chiffons, about to enter our home shrine. Every morning, my parents meditated, prayed, and chanted mantras at our shrine in front of the deities Krishna, Lakshmi, Shiva, Hanuman, and Ganesha. They did this to raise their consciousness for inner strength as they faced another day. My parents followed the scriptures contained within the Hindu Vedas, as well as the teachings of Guru Nanak and his holy book, the Guru Granth Sahib. I often sat in front of the shrine and watched my parents intently as they lit the incense and waved it in a circular motion in front of the little statues and pictures of the various gods and goddesses while chanting their puja, the Hindu prayer, and I would emulate them. Later on, I'd watch our Chinese nanny, Afong, attend to her various chores as she chatted to me in Cantonese. Her tiny body, dressed in the traditional black and white samfu, the traditional Chinese dress, made quick little movements as she scurried through the house. I was very attached to Afong. She'd been with us since I was 2 years old, and I couldn't remember a time when she wasn't part of our family. On a typical weekday, I wouldn't see my parents until early evening. Afong would pick me up from school, and after going home for lunch, she often took me to the market to purchase fresh food and produce for our household. We travelled by tram, and I used to delight in going with her on those outings. We hopped onto the tram as it stopped on the street right outside my apartment building. It was such an adventure for me. I gazed out the window as the tram made its way through the crowded, narrow streets of Hong Kong, through Happy Valley, Causeway Bay, and Wan Chai. And then we got off at the market, Afong gripping my little hand tightly. I delighted in taking in all the sights, smells, and sounds of my surroundings. My parents never took me to such exciting places. They only travelled by car and shopped in department stores, which I thought was dull in comparison to this kaleidoscope of colour and sensation. The market sold everything from fresh produce and household goods to trinkets and baubles. The vendors called out their wares, and the stalls were in no special order. Vegetable stalls were interspersed with stalls selling shoes, flowers, pots and pans, cheap plastic toys, colourful arrays of fresh fruit, costume jewellery, balloons, fresh meat, fresh fish, socks, stockings, colourful napkins and towels, tablecloths, and so on. Most of them with the wares spilling out onto the street. I was mesmerised for hours. "Afong, Afong, look at that! What's that man doing with the snake?" I cried out excitedly in my fluent Cantonese. "That's a snake vendor. He's going to tie up that snake and that family is going to take it home to make snake soup," Afong replied. I continued to watch in wide-eyed wonder as the snake writhed to fight for its freedom in the skillful hands of its handler, but to no avail. I felt compassion for the poor creature as it was expertly tied up with bamboo strips and caged in wire meshing. Nevertheless, I absolutely loved going to the markets with Afong. These little outings were a field day for my strong sense of adventure. Even after many years of living with us, Afong still lowered her eyes and averted her gaze each time my mother or father entered the room. Being an inquisitive child, I flooded her with questions about everything, including her behaviour. In my mind, I was always trying to reconcile the cultural differences between Afong and my parents. "How come you do that?" my six-year-old self wanted to know. "How come I do what?" Afong replied. "How come you look down when my parents come near you?" I asked in Cantonese. "To show respect," she explained. "How come?" "Your parents are my employers. I want to show I respect them and realize that they are my superiors." "Are they your superiors?" I was amazed by this piece of information. "Yes, because they give me work." "Am I your superior?" I asked. Afong laughed good-naturedly as she was used to my persistently inquiring mind. No, you didn't give me work. I'm here to look after you. Oh, okay, I called back as I left to play with my new doll. I also loved playing with Afong's daughter, Amoyi. From the time I was about 5 years old, Amoyi came to stay with her mother at our home on the weekends. She was only a year older than I, and because I spoke fluent Cantonese, we became friends. I really enjoyed her company. We played together with my toys, and we also went to the nearby park together. My parents were very happy for me to have a live-in playmate every weekend. Sunday, being Afong's day off, she took Amoyi and me out for lunch and then dropped her daughter back at her own parents' home, where she lived during the week. Although I never questioned it at the time, looking back, I realized that Afong was a single mother, bringing up Amoyi with the help of her family. Afong took me with her if I wasn't going out with my parents, and I really cherished those outings. As usual, we traveled everywhere by tram, beginning by going to a Chinese food stall for a meal. These places, called Dai Bai Tong in Cantonese, were outdoors on the street, so we sat on little wooden stools, slurping bowls of hot noodles and dumplings in soup while traffic drove past. After the meal, Afong took us to the home where Amoyi lived with her grandparents, a modest and sparsely furnished low-rise, Chinese-style walk-up loft apartment. I made my way around the dark stone interior of the apartment, my curious mind wanting to explore every corner, as Afong sipped tea with her parents. They drank tea out of little cups with colourful enamel designs of the animals from the Chinese zodiac, such as dragons or tigers, while I had a glass tumbler filled with juice or sweet tea. I never got bored of going there, and even if I tired of the conversation, I enjoyed looking out of the large, arched windows at the streets below, where the dried seafood vendors laid out fresh scallops and fish onto straw matting to dry out on the side of the road in the strong afternoon sun. Thus, my childhood was a mixture of East and West. Since Hong Kong was a British colony, mainly inhabited by Chinese, Christmas and Easter were celebrated with the same enthusiasm as the Hungry Ghost and Mid-Autumn Moon festivals. Afong and Amoyi taught me about Chinese traditions and beliefs, as well as the meaning behind all the festivals, and I loved the fact that Amoyi stayed with us during all her holidays. For example, the Hungry Ghost Festival was held on the 14th night of the 7th month of the lunar calendar. During that day, families prayed for the pains of their deceased relatives and gave offerings to their ancestors who had died. Anoop and I watched Afong and Amoyi, as well as Achan the cook, make offerings to their deceased relatives by burning effigies of fine goods made of paper. They lit a fire inside a large urn at the back of our home, at the bottom of the stairwell behind the kitchen, and fed the paper to the fire. The effigies resembled cars, houses, and even fake money. It was anticipated that their ancestors were receiving these luxuries in the other realm. Afong, does your grandpa really receive a house in heaven if you burn that paper house? I asked curiously. Yes, Anita. My grandparents expect me to continue to remember them and support them, even in the afterlife. We all have to respect our ancestors, she told me. Afong, Achan and Amoyi then sat down to a meal at their table at the back of the kitchen, which Achan had spent a fair part of the day preparing, with an extra place set at the table for the deceased relatives to join in the festivities. There were offerings of food in front of the extra place set for the departed. I often joined them for this meal and showed genuine concern about whether the ancestors were getting enough food put in front of them. One of my favorite times of the year was the Mid-Autumn Moon Festival, which was when I got to choose a brilliantly colorful paper lantern from the myriad on display, hanging from the ceilings of many local stores. The lanterns came in all shapes and sizes, including the animals of the Chinese zodiac. I always loved the rabbit shape best. Afong took both Amoyi and me to choose our lanterns together from the shops behind the markets. In some ways, this festival is very similar to the American holiday Thanksgiving, and it's the celebration of the large harvest moon. The ceremony includes eating and distributing mooncakes, of which there are numerous varieties. We then lit the candles inside the beautiful and colorful paper lanterns and took them outside. Together with the other children in our neighborhood, Amoyi and I hung our lanterns outside our homes and on trees and fences. We were allowed to stay up later than usual on this night and play by the light of the lanterns and the moon, which was always at its fullest and brightest for the year. My family also celebrated all the Indian festivals, including Diwali, which is the Hindu festival of lights, with great enthusiasm. We always wore new clothes for the occasion, and it was a very exciting time for me. Even at that young age, I absolutely loved the idea of shopping for a new outfit prior to the festivities. My mother usually took my brother and me to Lane Crawford, at that time the largest department store in the central business district of Hong Kong. We would run up and down the children's department, me looking excitedly at the dresses and pinafores, my brother looking at the shirts and trousers. My mother would help me pick out a dress, and for this time of year, it was usually the more colourful the better to go with the festive occasion. On the auspicious evening, my whole family got all dressed up in our new clothes, my mother usually in a brand new colourful sari, wearing all her jewellery, my father in a traditional kurta patloon, which is Indian shirt and pants, my brother in trousers and a shirt, and me in my new dress. After getting all dressed up, we went to the Hindu temple in Happy Valley to mingle with others from our Indian community and sing bhajans, which are Hindu devotional songs. Our voices, interspersed with chimes and bells, echoed through the high domed ceiling of the temple and drifted out into the evening air. I remember actually feeling the sounds of the temple bells reverberate through my very being, touching a deep part of my soul. On every Hindu festival day, the temple courtyard would come alive with colour, music, dance, and the smells of spicy Indian vegetarian food weaving their way amidst the sweet fragrance of incense. How I loved that atmosphere. "Mama, I'm going to the front to get the Maharaj," the Indian priest, "to put vermilion on my forehead," I cried out to my mother, excitedly in Sindhi, as my small body wove its way through the colourful crowd. The vermilion streak that the Maharaj dabs on each person's forehead signifies the opening of the third eye, and I always ensured that I got my red streak each time I went to the temple. Because of my Hindu roots, I grew up to believe in karma and reincarnation. Most Eastern religions are based on these laws, believing that the purpose of life is to raise our consciousness and spiritually evolve through each cycle of birth and death to the point of reaching enlightenment. At that point, we break the cycle of birth and death and no longer need to reincarnate into a flesh and blood body. That state is called nirvana. Thinking about this sometimes made me anxious, so I was careful not to do anything that could possibly create negative karma in a future life. Even as a youngster, my mind continuously processed what could be construed as creating good karma versus bad, as I tried to perfect myself against a barometer created by my cultural beliefs. My Hindu religion also taught me that meditation and chanting are two of many methods commonly used to cleanse the mind of impure thoughts and assist us in our quest for enlightenment. Meditation helps us develop the awareness that we're much more than our physical selves. So as I grew older, I was already aware that we're more than our biology.